Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, allow your ears to take your libido by the hand and lead you to the safest of spaces. I'm comedy writer and 42-year-old child, Gabby Hutchison-Crouch, and honestly, some of my cartoon crushes are so bad I have Funko Pops like some sort of YouTuber. Why are some cartoons attractive? I want to find out with the help of some funny guests who are here to talk about the animated characters that make them want to sing a serenade along with an impromptu jazz band of nearby alley cats playing dustbins and old mops. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just talk about two-dimensional bum cheeks? Whatever we do, I hope it'll help you see that those idle thoughts you get about Wreck-It Ralph wrecking you with those big, big hands are absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. With me this episode is a comedy writer who has worked on kiddies comedies, including Horrible Histories, Dogs in Space, and The Adventures of Gumball, as well as grown-ups comedies, including his Radio 4 sitcom The Lentil Sorters and the Taskmaster People's podcast, which he also co-hosts with Lou Sanders. He once spent an entire weekend watching later era Simpsons episodes for his single Guardian column, really setting a high bar for a maximum time and effort put in for minimum reward. And that's coming from me, somebody who writes genre books for a living and makes niche interest podcasts for zero financial gain. It's little Jack Bernhardt!
Hello, Gabby! Oh, thank you for bringing up that massive waste of time.
It's now become the thing that if any of the sort of the writers group that we're both a part of sees any chance for somebody to spend a week doing a terrible task that they will probably be paid £50 for, we try to make Jack do it.
I will have you know, it was £150. Yeah. I actually think the Guardian, because the worst thing is the Simpsons one was maybe the fourth one I did. Uh-huh. I watched all of Quibi. I watched nothing but Channel 5. I watched all of Bones in a week, which is technically impossible. I think after that they were like, okay, we're gonna have to up your rate because otherwise you might I don't know what's gonna happen to you.
Are you secretly some sort of Catholic? Just putting yourself.
Oh, well, that is actually my. I put my hair shirt on. I turn on yes. Disney Plus. I watch Bad Simpsons. It was really fun. There was someone found my Guardian thing and took a screenshot of it and said, "Please let this man die."
And someone said this to me, and I was like, "Friend, I can heartily concur. I think it would be the kindest thing to do at this point."
The problem is, you pitch one at the start of lockdown, and then it's like, "I could just do that, couldn't I?"
I could just be my living. How much do you reckon you were being paid per hour?
Oh, don't think about that. Never think about that, Gabby. Never, ever. I think the problem is you can't say it's below minimum wage because it's all my own choice. And that's what I said to the person who had said, please let this person die. I was like, the joke's on you because I chose to do this. Yeah, well, I actively pitch these things.
As I said, I write genre books for a living. I get no money doing this. I haven't even bothered putting up a Patreon for this because it's so niche. So I understand your pain.
But I think it's partially like, God, why are we doing this? But also there's a sort of level of just really going deep into a passion and being like, this is for me. And sometimes I find that if I'm trying to write something and it's not going well, I'll just do something that's incredibly self-indulgent that involves watching 30 hours of The Simpsons. And you do get your brain working in different weird ways and like having different theories and having like different ways of looking at things. This is definitely I've rationalized this after the event, I think, to make myself feel better about all the time I've wasted. But still, I think there's a level of it that is,
yeah, it's not quite a hobby with us. I was going to say it's like a hobby, but it's also
it's very stressful.
Yes, I don't know, maybe it's also sort of part of the process, because I think, I think this book has certainly sort of helps me think about character, and helps me think about what characters appeal as a writer.
I have another friend who is a writer, and he's like, and my hobby is I do writing with my friends. And I was like, is that a hobby, or is that just your work again?
That's just work you don't get paid for.
Exactly.
No, I'm the same. I still write fanfic occasionally, and that's just, I'm going to stop my work writing and I'll do some of my hobby writing, which I've been looking forward to. Oh, work all day long. Oh, it's the evening now. I'm going to do some more of the same.
Some fun work.
As a treat. Yeah.
Oh God, we're such nerds. It's terrible.
We are awful, aren't we? It's like, what did I said something to Lindsay once. Oh, it's about one of my. It was like one of my crushes of people who was an actual human, and I was like, I don't want to sleep with him. I just want him to laugh at my jokes. Oh. And Lindsay said, oh, Gabby, you're such a writer.
That's very true, though. I mean, that's a very specific kind of crush, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, I completely get that, where you're sort of, you throw these things out there so that the specific person you're really into will just react in some way and think like, oh God, that would be good. Just a smile. I'll take a smile at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh dear.
We're both awful.
But yeah, but I think intense obsessive passions is a good setup for this podcast as well.
Yes, definitely. You know? And also having crushes on people that you'd never sleep with, because in this case it's physically impossible.
Science can only go so far.
Yes. So let's get on with your choices. So your first choice is a grumpy abandoned sewer mutant turned grumpy but caring spaceship captain. She's got no depth perception and a questionable taste in men. Her idea of going wild is wearing a stripe on her boots or a green version of her usual vest top. I've been to the year 3000. Not much has changed, but they live in New York, and the lady who does deliveries is pretty fine. It's Taranga Leela.
Oh, we got our own busted version. That's great.
We got our own busted version. I always felt that busted song was kind of about, because it came out around the same kind of time as Futurama. And I always felt like, the busted boys are big fans of Matt Groening's latest work.
I mean, I feel like they would have mentioned, like, you know, various, like Bender. I feel like in the song, if it was about Futurama, Bender would have come up at least once, because Bender's a big one.
He is.
Also, the line of that song that annoys me is when they go, "Not much has changed, but we live underwater." And I know it's sort of a jokey bit, but I feel like that's you're bearing the lead there, personally. Yeah.
And also, someone's great-great-great-granddaughter by the year 3000 will have been dead for some time. That only accounts for about 200 years.
It's one of the jokes in Futurama, when in the first episode of Futurama, no less, when Fry is getting, he's naked because they have to probe him for the start of the episode.
Yeah.
And as he's getting changed, Leela says, you do have a relative. It's your great-great-great-great-great, and then the thing fast forward and Fry is fully dressed and she's still saying great-great-great-great-great. Grandson, and that's Hubert Farnsworth, who is an amazing character as well. I mean, Futurama is one of my all-time favorite shows ever.
It is a great show. It managed to hit its peak much faster than The Simpsons did. I feel like The Simpsons took a couple of series to get there, to work out what it was. Futurama takes like 3 episodes to really get into the swing of, we know who these characters are and we know what they're doing.
I think The Simpsons probably like laid a lot of groundwork for how you do it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And then Futurama was able to take advantage of it. But it is like, I'd say peak Futurama episodes are as good as, if not possibly better than peak Simpsons. It has less of a peak.
Yes,
but equally, there are as a percentage of the show, there are definitely more good Futurama episodes.
Yes,
if Futurama turns off on TV, you're like, there is a good chance this will be a very good episode.
Mm.
Whereas that's not true of The Simpsons.
Yes, definitely. Unless you're watching it on Channel 4, which used to cut it to smithereens. They used to cut it. Channel 4 did not know what to do with Futurama, so it bought the rights, and then it would show it because it was a cartoon. They'd show it as part of, like, the T4, like, for kids thing. Then they went, but hang on a minute, this kids program that we bought has got loads of sex jokes in it. They must have put those in by mistake. We'll just hack all of those out so that the scenes don't make any sense.
Oh, God.
It was just, like, there were whole scenes that people were talking so disjointedly. You had, you know, it made no sense in the scene because they just hacked out any reference to sex. Like, dudes, just put it on in the evening.
Put it on later. It's also like, you know what The Simpsons is, and like, yeah, it's a very weird thing where it's like, couldn't you just, I suppose Family Guy wasn't an established, not to praise Family Guy, but it wasn't an established like, oh, this is what an adult animation is.
Yeah.
So I suppose there's a level where you'd be like, oh, it's a kid's cartoon. This is going on at this time. And it's like The Simpsons, which was kind of for kids, but not like The Simpsons has a lower threshold of kids can watch this. But yeah, yes. there was a lot of, I mean, Futurama is a wonderful, brilliant show, but it's not the same demographic, I suppose.
No, it's not. The Simpsons was about a family that included children, whereas this is about a found family that's mostly made up of people in their early 20s, and people in their early 20s are single and they're going to be having sex.
They are, as they do in this show. There's some sex.
There's some sex, and that's fine. You know, there's not, you know, it's, if you haven't seen Futurama, why not? But if you haven't seen it, there's no actual sex scenes in it, but there's partial nudity and there's a lot of smutty humor.
There's one particular episode when it's Zoidberg's home planet and it's the mating episode. That is filthy.
The Ponvar episode.
And it's really funny and really good. And actually thinking about it, weirdly, like, Leela is obviously my first choice, but that lobster creature.
That
Zoidberg falls in love with and Fry accidentally makes fall in love with. She is also very fine.
Caviar's on my neck!
And there's a bit where Zoidberg says, I'll get it, because he's and not entirely sure where anatomy is. He points at Fry's head and goes, I'm going to kill him here, right in the gonads. And Fry says, nobody correct him.
He's trying to win her over, and Amy says, tell her she lost weight. You appear to have lost some body mass. Do you have some sort of parasite?
And she says, I have. Thanks for noticing. I love it. Oh, God.
It's really funny. Zoidberg is really such an out there character. He was originally brought in as like sort of slightly higher tier to Fry because he was the company's doctor. And very, very quickly he becomes the loser of all losers, and he lives in a skip. And
it's such an odd evolution as a character. It's the classic, you still have Zoidberg. You all still have Zoidberg.
I am with you. I'm very much with you on Leela. She is great. She's it's her awkwardness that and her grumpiness.
It's the grumpiness.
She's put up all these walls because she's so sad and lonely, and to me that's hot.
I know, and I can't quite, because I think, so Futurama was obviously quite like, in terms of my comedy, and also I was about 12 or 13, I suppose, when it came out. I think she's very, I mean, yeah, she's not sort of like, traditionally what you would say in like cartoon, like over the top sexualized ridiculous
no, not at all.
Character.
She's got a big nose, and obviously she's a cyclops, she's a mutant, so she's got one massive eyeball that she's very self-conscious about, and she's dressed as if, you know, it's kind of sexy, you know, she's got it's quite tight fitting, but it's also very, very practical clothes that she's wearing. It's just a vest and some leggings and occasionally a jacket and like a big pair of boots, and it's, she's, you know, she's always been stood next to Amy, who's like small and cute and
Amy
and
keeps
pretty
on insulting her and making jokes about like how, I mean, it jokes that probably haven't aged very well about how she, you know, her body size is wrong, effectively. Mm. But like, I mean, she's also just, I think it's a lot of it is down to Katie Sagal, the voice actor.
Yes.
Like, there's just so much like depth and like, as you say, grumpiness, but also like it's the sarcasm and you know, you have to analyze what you find attractive in everything. But I think there's a lot of that where it's just, she's so effortlessly cool, but as you say, also awkward and weird and like doesn't quite fit in, but she's self-conscious, but not like self-consciously cool. I can't quite explain it, but she's just, I think growing up, she was very much like she's just incredible. And I wish she was real. And also I would be, if I actually met her, I would be terrified of her. Like, I wouldn't be able to have a conversation with her.
She's a rare female example of one of my favourite fictional tropes, which I call gruff soft. It's the characters who've got a hard shell and a soft centre, who've put up like these gruff walls, because inside they are the most tender, sweet, kind little fluff ball of a person. They've just like put this shell outside of them, and she's a really good, it's mostly male characters who get to be gruff soft, but you get the occasional female one, and she's definitely there. Because she's soft with Fry, but she's also, we see the softness quite early on with Nibbler.
Just remembering Nibbler, and like, it does bring out a completely different side to her, which is, and also, well, there's the Poplar episodes as well, the where she actively becomes like a mother but also a murderer. It's a weird, like, I mean, Futurama is incredibly good at that kind of like bringing different characters into different different roles very quickly, and having them, a character who is traditionally very like, as you say, like gruff and putting up these walls, it doesn't feel it. I think in a lesser show, a female character becoming a quote unquote mother, or like becoming a, you know, sort of a more maternal or typically like feminine role, it would feel like a sort of, it would feel like the show was reverting back to a kind of type, if that makes sense. Whereas I think here it's just, it sort of expands her as a character. You sort of go like, how would Leela be as a mother? How would Leela, you know, how is she protective of people? And how is she sort of, you know, she has this, as you say, a found family that she both hates and loves and wants to protect as much as she possibly can. And it kind of, I think Futurama and I think The Simpsons, but particularly with Futurama, the sort of the found familyness of it, there's a real sense that this is a fully formed person.
It does do that for Amy as well, because Amy becomes a parent, becomes a father.
I love that so much.
With her relationship with Kif, she gets a lot of growth. She gets to, you know, she sort of gets the chance to mature, and I feel like it's the same with Leela. Leela gets a lot of chance to grow and to become even more well-rounded, and this sort of this constant battle that's going on between the hard shell she's had to put up from being abandoned and being the only one of her kind she believes, and this sort of softness, and especially the turning point with Leela's home planet.
Oh my god,
which, I'm feeling myself welling up just thinking about that. So we think that if you don't watch Futurama, we believe for most of the show that she's an alien who was abandoned on Earth, and she's never found the planet that she's from. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't know her own kind. And then we discover quite late towards the show's run that the initial run. We find out that she was always from Earth. She's a mutant, but she is the least mutated mutant in the sewers. And her parents believed that she had a better chance on the surface.
Don't do it, Leela.
They killed my parents!
Close.
They are my parents.
Yes.
I had the professor analyze the alienese letter that was found with you.
What does it say?
I don't know, but the analysis showed it was printed on recycled toilet paper, a squeezably soft paper used mainly in the sewers.
It says, "Your parents love you very much."
We still do.
So, I'm not an alien? I'm a mutant?
We never wanted you to know. You deserved a better life.
You must despise us. You're my parents. All I've ever wanted is to know you. This is the happiest moment of my life.
They abandoned her, but abandoned her with very heavy hearts and continued with love and continued to watch over her and care over her as she made a new life, because the sewer mutants are treated as very much an underclass, and they believe that she would be marginalized but not treated as an underclass and given a lot more human rights if she lived on the surface, and they were correct. That's a real turning point when she has a family and when she's able to reconnect with her family and with her kind. That's beautiful.
it's really interesting because it's the I was just thinking about it now, because the episode where, so that is a huge turning point, and also I remembered that I put that on. I sometimes fall asleep to, if I can't sleep, I'll watch all episodes of Futurama that I know really, really well.
Yeah.
Last year, I've recently had a baby, and I was having a rare nap with my wife, and we were just like, okay, we're gonna have a nice sleep. And I was like, I'll put Futurama on, and we put that one on, and we were both quite sleep deprived, and we didn't fall asleep. And like after 20 minutes, we were both like sobbing and like, why did we put this on? We're supposed to be falling asleep. What's going on?
if you're a parent, that episode will make you cry.
It's oh my god, it's such a beautiful episode. It's so well done, and Futurama is again very good at those tear jerky episodes with where they play with time quite a lot. Frystog is a classic example. Another one that's really, really good that I think the Luck of the Fryrish, rather.
Yes, with his brother.
But they all have a similar structure where you sort of learn the backstory at the same time as the main story is going on. And it's such an interesting way of doing it. I'm not sure. I don't think a lot of shows do it as well as Futurama do it. Mm. And God, that's so sad and so beautiful. And they always hit the emotional point of both stories at the exact same point. And it's always so well done. Leela's home planet is one of the, oh god, it's so sad and so sweet.
It is, but unlike with all of Fry's sad backstories, there is a chance for redemption. Once she's found out the twist, then she's able to reconnect with her family. Obviously with Fry, every sad backstory that we get is 1,000 years old, and there's no way that he can put things right. With Leela, she is able to. She gets that chance, and that's really nice for her, I think. And
I really like, because I think that there's a sort of a character trait. You're right, because it is a real turning point. Before that moment, there's a sort of quite a lot of one particular episode, there's Leela feeling an obligation to having been this, you know, really cool, beautiful, smart, funny woman, like she supposedly finds the last of her species.
Yes. And
he kind of turns her into a housewife. Under the premise that they need to repopulate, he will effectively domesticate her in order to repopulate the planet and to, you know, save the alien race. And like, it's a really interesting episode because, again, I think it's sort of, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's horrible. It's horrible for many reasons. I think one of the reasons is that it's kind of an in joke about Katie Sagal being on Married with Children. Which is fine, but also you watch it now and you're like, this sitcom is like close to 40 years old at this point. Bonkers, but we're having to rewatch it. But like the idea that she would, that she has such a loyalty or a sense of duty to her. Like to her people, that she would effectively give up her life and accept what is a really incredibly depressing existence is both quite powerful, and also again it doesn't kind of, it's that thing again where a character making that horrible choice and doing something that you know lessens them as a character, I think in another show would feel, I mean, it does feel gross, but if you feel like because it comes from a place of duty and comes from a place of like I have to do this, there's a sense of a character making a decision rather than it being like just foisted upon them. So that's the sort of initially, and then when the turning point happens, as you say, like suddenly it becomes her about trying to make up for lost time, and there's something very sweet about when she's sort of with her trying to make things right with her family, make things right with her parents. There's a very sweet episode where they all go, they all get youth.
Yes, I was thinking about the one where she turns into a teenager.
Oh god, it's beautiful.
Yes,
she has the responsibility of trying to figure out why this is happening and how they can make everyone old again, but at the same time she gets to be a teenager with her parents like, yeah. And it's so sweet and it's so well done, because she, again, I think it's just a dedication and a love for the characters that means that they really think about what does Leela want more than anything. And it's to relive her childhood, it's to get back what she missed out with her parents, and knowing that the more she does that, also the more chance there is she A, can't go back, and B, that it'll like her found family will be destroyed. So there's that character dilemma.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, and I realize I'm not talking about how sexy she is.
No, that's fine. I think what Leela really wants is to belong, and it doesn't. And there are so many different ways that she can belong to her birth family, to her species, to her found family, and in a relationship with Fry, which is the ongoing, you know, she is the love interest technically to the protagonist, but she is not at all one dimensional. She is very, very complex and funny, and has a lot of pathos in her own right. And a relationship with Fry is only one of the many, many ways that she is able to feel that she does belong, which I think is really nice. So you never lose sight of that romance. The romance is always very touching and it's always there, but it's not the only thing about her. She's not just there to be won.
Oh, definitely not. I think in a way I think that the show did it well when there are lots of very good romantic episodes where Leela has that role. But I think actually what excites me more about Leela, or what sort of like what makes me effectively have a crush on her and sort of feel very close to her, is that sort of sense of her own personality and her own like drive, as it were, to be the best and to find her family and to be this kind of like she's not a part of a power couple, if that makes sense.
No.
Like Fry is well below her, and I think the show would have been there's a different version of the show where Fry and Leela are entirely platonic and that's fine. But equally, I think the romantic version they did. I feel like if you did Futurama again now, without the old version of Futurama, you could easily make it so that Leela and Fry are in never way, it would be like a couple of episodes of flirtation and then move way past that very quickly.
Yeah.
But there are also some great, like I'm just remembering the Sting episode.
Oh god, the Sting. Well, that's the one where you realize how much she loves him.
Exactly.
Where it's always been, before that, it's always been, it's kind of felt kind of one-sided that Fry's got this crush on this incredible woman.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, same Fry. But I think it's in the Sting that you see that his good heart, even though he's stupid and schlubby, he has a very, very good heart, and that is attractive. Anyway, it's very attractive to somebody who feels so sort of left out and abandoned as Leela does. You know, having somebody who loves you with that sort of intensity and has that kind of heart is very attractive to her. And you see Fry through her eyes, and the Sting is another good turning point, because the Sting is where you start going, this isn't an unrequited crush. This is genuine romantic feelings that are requited. They're not in a place at the moment where they can act on that.
And also it feels earned. I think in a way that
yes.
Like, I think, you know, to reference The Simpsons again, but, like, one of the things that I think people keep on coming back to with The Simpsons is, like, why is Marge with Homer? And there are quite a lot of times where you're like, there is no good reason. This man is an oaf. And she is a beautiful, wonderful woman who has sort of been, like, trapped in some ways by him. And I think there was something quite nice about the sting in particular. As you say, it does kind of like, it shows what is beautiful and great about Fry, in a way that, in a way that you don't necessarily get from other episodes. Oh God, it's just a gorgeous episode. I will just sit here reference Futurama for the rest of the time here, but the constant refrain of you have to wake up, and just like the fact that Fry is there caring for her, it's very hard, I think, to make with those kinds of relationship where it's clearly been set up as Fry is in love with Leela and Fry is a lower status character and Leela is a great status character. Like, why she would love him is such a hard thing to convey, and I think without betraying who Fry is, which is a dumb idiot, they show what makes him great, and it's kind
of he's a dumb kind idiot
who will also never give up. And that's, again,
yes,
like I can't remember who said this, someone said it recently, that like there are so many things that if it's consensual, you'll overlook it as being, you know, like, oh, that's really sweet, but if it's, you know, unrequited love, it comes across as weird and stalkery. And I think the idea of Fry never giving up is one of those things where you're like, if she was like, stop doing this, which I think sometimes she is, it would be horrible. But, you know, like he moves stars for her, effectively. He will take on alien races who want to what's the giant brains? He'll take those people on to save her, effectively. Like, he does do a hell of a lot for her, but I think it's always hard to show what makes that why that's a good character trait beyond just I love you and I'll never stop loving you.
You've got to turn it into a genuine love story and not just a stalker.
Because it so often can be, again, you can read the story to be something truly horrible and sad.
Let's move on to something else that's sad. That's my segue. So your second choice is a big sister with the ultimate big sister energy. She's the acting parent to a grieving child, even though she's a grieving teenager herself. Permanently stressed, broke, and barely coping with her responsibilities, she should really be off doing all that stuff at college. But no, she has to stay home when she can crawl through the dog flap. At least she gets to catch some waves occasionally. It's big sister from Lilo and Stitch, Nanny Pelikai. Oh, yes. I think it is Pelikai. I was about to pronounce it in a very Polish way.
Nanny Pelikai.
Nanny Pelikai.
Sister of Helga Pelikai, yeah.
Yeah. No, she's Hawaiian, she's not Polish.
Amazing backstory.
Yeah. So you've chosen another really stressed woman with grumpy teen mum energy who buries her son behind walls. Jack, what's going on?
Let's analyze this, please. I think she's... So I watched Lilo and Stitch like a bit growing up. And I think Nanny's sort of like the... what's the word? You know, when you're growing up and you have a best friend and then they have an older sister, and you sort of like, even though you don't know much about her older sister or older brother, you sort of become like infatuated with this idea of them.
Yeah.
I think that's very much me and Nanny. And I think that like in a weird way, like, you're right. I haven't analyzed the fact that she was incredibly stressed and really struggling to keep her life together. And also a very much like doing everything for her family to the point that she can't go and do anything else in a way like Leela being trapped by the person who wanted her to repopulate the earth. I suppose there is a level of her being completely beholden to this world, but I wasn't analyzing that at the time. I was just like, look at that beautiful unattainable woman.
it's her stressness that I like.
But what does that say about us, Gabby?
I know, it says that we're writers and parents probably, but I'm also, I don't know about you, I am a big sister. I know you're not a big sister.
Sure, but I have a big sister, so I think there's a level of that.
Ah, right.
And also, my wife is a big sister as well, so.
Ah, you married a big sister. Maybe, yeah. Then you can, there is this definite big sister energy that's quite stressed.
Yeah.
so it's just, I think the ultimate big sister with that big sister energy is Luisa from Encanto.
Yes.
I mean, she has a whole song about stressed big sister energy.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, God.
And that Surface Pressure song, that's just it.
Yeah. And it's so well done in Encanto for that reason, because I think it kind of gives an insight into, I think Nanny could have definitely have had that in Lilo and Stitch.
Oh God,
if there was
definitely.
Time. If there was time, definitely. But you know, they're like, sorry, we've got to move on. The world's about to explode. We can't have, yeah.
Yeah. And Lin-Manuel Miranda isn't even famous yet, so he can't come and write you a song.
Sorry, Nanny.
But yeah, she has got that. You can just feel the desperation coming off her.
Yeah.
That she's, you know, she's trying so hard. And she's only 19.
I know. Again, I think that this is one of those things where growing, like watching it as a kid, I was like, oh, that is an adult. That adult can deal with anything. And look, they're doing all these things. And, oh, look, she can't really cut. Ha, that's funny. And then watching it again, you're like, how would I, if I was in this situation... Yeah, good Lord.
Yeah, this is an orphaned child trying to keep the last scrap of her family together.
And there's a social worker who is coming to take that child away, and she can't get a job, and she has a boyfriend who is an idiot who keeps on trying to have a date with her, and you're like, "What? Just shut up! My sister's going to be taken away." Like,
yeah,
I it's one of those weird things where I'm like looking at it again, I'm like. I just want to protect her and hug her and just be like, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this together. As a kid, I was like,
Yeah. Why are you shouting? Yeah.
Why? Such a shouty woman. Such a shouty, attractive woman. Terrible.
You're such a pain.
So why don't you sell me by a rabbit instead?
At least a rabbit will behave better than you.
Go ahead. Be happy because it will be smarter than me too.
And quieter.
I don't like it because it's stinky like you.
Go to your room.
I'm already in my room.
Yeah, she's just been sort of thrown into this adult role. Bless her heart.
Yeah.
And I think not much time is given. I mean, obviously. Most of the time is given to Lilo's grief.
Yes.
How the grief is going to affect a small child. And she is going to play up and she is going to lash out because she's got no other way of expressing this sorrow. And I suppose that, you know, Nani's way of dealing with it is to throw herself into work, which is probably another reason why I love her.
Yeah. Definitely that level.
Yes. Just swallow it. Just swallow it all and just work until you drop.
Nani, instead of having problems, have you decided to watch all of The Simpsons? That might be a good idea.
You can make a sweet $200 a week.
Oh, Gabby, it's not a week. It takes much longer than a week. I think there is that energy, and you're right, it's definitely shared with Leela as someone who is trying to work their way through trauma and difficulties and like trying to get out the other end of it. And I think that yes, there's something I find, I guess it's a terrible thing to find very attractive, but it's because it's something that's in myself as well to be like, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily you going, oh yeah, I just really like women who are going through a hard time. I think it's probably more feeling it that in your, you know, seeing that in yourself and identifying with them.
Yeah. I think there's definitely that. And I think there's also a level of anyone who, I think I find people who are really trying, like who make an effort and who have a lot of enthusiasm. That is something that I think tugs at my heartstrings quite a lot. And
absolutely,
it doesn't even need to be someone going through horrible trauma, like their parents dying. But like, it's someone who is like, God, they are just doing so. They are trying so hard here. They are doing so much work that I think that then makes you kind of like, it just instantly makes me gravitate towards them. Which I think is, you know, I'm not saying this like this is a rare and bizarre kink I have.
I think it's a genuine thing. If you're watching a fictional character, it's much more rewarding to see them trying and failing and picking themselves up again and trying again than it's people just being effortlessly good at something. Yeah.
And I think also it's the thing of making sure that isn't frustrating to watch. And I think that it would be very easy and I think Disney's very good at this, and I think it'd be very easy in Lilo and Stitch to have that character be just someone who is stressed and shouty and angry, and who if only it wasn't for this kid and Stitch, then she'd have had it all. She could have done so much stuff. Like, that never comes across. There's always, you know, like she is limited by them because that's the nature of the situation she finds herself in. But like, she, that love is overwhelming, and it's not that she's being selfless, but that the reason she's working so hard is for her family. And again, I think that's very Disney. Like, that's very much the sort of like the make sure the family is at the center of it, or make sure the emotional pull is at the center of it.
I mean, that's the whole point of Lilo and Stitch. Yeah. It's family. It's Ohana.
It's Ohana. You gotta be Ohana. Yeah. Oh God. I think there's a level of it also, which is growing up in very wet, miserable England and watching somewhere that looks just impossibly exotic and impossibly beautiful. Yes. Not exotic like sort of, you know,
tropical.
Yeah, tropical. Yeah, I think that's the sort of the just looks incredibly beautiful and very like just somewhere you just want to, like a paradise. But I think that what's interesting is that because Lilo and Stitch is about family trauma and is about like it's set in this wonderful world, but there is still something that grounds it, and there's something that makes it feel very like the fact that Nani sort of represents like struggling and strife and going through things, and the idea of like the juxtaposition of this beautiful place and this difficult situation. I think
you don't often see stressed Hawaiians.
You don't.
You see stressed Hawaiians in this and Sandra in Superstore.
I was gonna say Superstore.
Two examples of stressed Hawaiians.
You're right. Repressed, very awkward, trying to make the best of it Hawaiians. Very rare.
Let's move on to some more good Disney.
Yes. Oh, good. Good link. Good segue.
Yay. Yeah, thank you. So your third choice is a rootin' tootin' adventurous cowgirl with abandonment issues, claustrophobia, and horrendous PTSD. 3 for 3 for such lonely, traumatized female characters, Jack. I salute your commitment. It takes her decades to get over the pain of losing love and learn to trust again, but if you're a small plastic spaceman, she's all yours. She's a crying, talking, sleeping, walking, living doll. Yodelay, hee-hoo, it's Jessie, the yodeling cowgirl from Toy Story 2 and onwards.
I'm suddenly re-examining my life choices. Oh my God.
It was just when I was putting those three characters together, it's like, there's a lot of mental illness going on with these.
And there's very much a lot of people's personality traits being like created by their trauma. Oh my God, I really hadn't thought about this. Because you got grumpy, stressed, and too enthusiastic, all because...
And PTSD.
Yeah, all because of PTSD. Oh, wow. Let's not think about this too much.
But she's another character who puts up loads of walls. But interestingly, her walls aren't grumpiness. Her wall is this veneer of, like, manic cheer, which is... Again, it's great to see. That's another character trope I like. Happy on the outside and just crying on the inside. And just the more manic and the more, hey, gang, let's do the whole show right here, they get, the more you know they're just dying on the inside.
Yeah. I think everything I write has at least one Jessie character. Which again says a lot about me, and I really shouldn't think about it too hard, as I say. But like, it's it is that thing of someone who has manic energy or very like just a desperate desire to run away from the problems by pushing themselves to something else. But also, again, growing up with her, like, I think it's such a smart movie. Toy Story 2, I think, is my favorite of the Toy Stories.
Isn't it? Yeah, I was going to say that it is really, really good. Because the first Toy Story, it's fine, but it's mostly about jealousy.
Yeah, there's
an ego.
Yeah, there's a kind of like, there's a sense of, I was rewatching again recently where you are like, Woody is incredibly unlikable. And that
Woody isn't. Dickhead in that first film.
And like, that's fine, but it's not a good basis for a kids' movie. Like,
no. Like,
the man who wants to kill off his rival. No. And like, there's the whole like the toys under the bed, and I know everyone talks about this as well, but like the horrible the spikes the creatures that he creates. I mean, there's a lot going on that is incredibly traumatizing for Toy Story 1. And also all the other toys, like they at one point like seem okay with the idea of Woody dying. Like there's a lot where like they're like, oh, because Buzz says, you know, the only reason they start to care again is because Buzz like says, no, you should care about this kid.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of things where you're like, characters are acting very like callously here. It's more like a Game of Thrones than it is Toy Story. But yeah, Toy Story 2 I think is a lot more about the trauma of growing up, the inevitable sense of loss.
Yes.
Those
films, that becomes the theme. Yes. That becomes the running theme. So it starts, Toy Story 1 is about jealousy and male ego. Toy Story 2 and onwards are about the grief that you feel when your children, to the knowledge that your children will grow up and will leave home and will leave you. And even though there's a joy to that, there is a real grief to it as well. And it starts with Jessie. She's like the pivot because she's the person who's been through that.
It is going through that, which I think is the interesting thing. Like, I think that she, I can't remember how they introduce her, like how early they introduce that idea of the old child.
It's about halfway through. It's when it's sort of setting her up as the fake antagonist.
Yes.
When you think it's her who's destroying, and
it's actually Kelsey Grammer. Yeah.
Bringing in this idea that this very, very cheerful female counterpart to Woody is just a mess. Yeah. She's so sad and she's so traumatized. Because she was just left for decades, and that's what it's going to do. That's what it can do to you if you're not prepared for it. And the song, I can't listen to the song without, that's another one I'm afraid that's going to get you if you're a parent.
Yeah.
Because that is a song that is just, it's so full of grief.
It's amazing. Man. And also, I'm trying to think, are there any other songs in Toy Story?
There's You Got a Friend in Me, but that's not really sung by a character. There's a concept of the film.
Yeah, there's sort of like a theme that's around. And then they sing at the end, don't they, I suppose, at the end of Toy Story 2 with Wheezy. But like, in terms of breaking up a story to do a song, like, in order for that to work, the song has to be amazing, and the song has to feel so relevant, and it's so good, and it just, oh god, it's heartbreaking. And
it really is.
I think that it's that switch, and I think it comes down to, like, it's not just feeling like an emotional, I think, yeah, you know, as we say, stressed sad women, apparently big turn on for me, but it's also that, as you say, the depth of, like, we're realizing that this person is, the joy and the happiness that they are trying to push through is, is hiding something much sadder and darker. And I think that that depth is something that in it makes it that much more believable that they're real, and that therefore it makes them like, it makes it harder to get out of your head, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, oh gosh. I mean, just there's an image of her, like holding her, like just holding herself when she's, when she first has to talk about, oh gosh. Yes. I've just actually found the there's a concept artwork for Jessie's original design, Toy Story 2, where she's holding her, like her legs. She's like curled up in the fetal position.
Oh,
and it is so sad.
And, yeah.
Oh God. It's,
when she's sort of, nervously sort of playing with her plaits, yes. Like she's there to sort of self-soothe. Oh God.
But again, I think it comes down to very good Disney story writing and like just knowing exactly what drives characters and what kind of trauma you can put them through and what they can handle. That like, it's hard to watch, but it's never feels like, it never feels like, well, it does. It can feel over the top in terms of like if you watch it with these eyes on. But I suppose like, what am I trying to say? That she feels fully realized and doesn't feel like you're kind of like the jabs that they're making with her are like, you know, unnecessarily cruel or unnecessarily like oh God, we're just putting this person through trauma for the sake of it, or just so it'll like create her character. It feels like this is a very real thing that parents and everyone in a sense will go through of like having to grow up, and that this is just that manifested inside a very sweet, very, very happy doll.
I think that it's great that they're doing that with a new character, because she's entirely new at that stage, and with a new, you know, they're bringing in a new female character who is, I remember when Toy Story 2 was coming out, people saying, oh, and they've given Woody a girlfriend. It's like, well, first of all, no, Woody already has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
She's not a romantic interest for Woody at all. She's just from the same toy range as him. And that's not what her story's about, even though, and she does have just the flimsiest romances that just sort of feels tacked on at the end, but that's fine. I think that's more to sort of show that she's become part of the gang.
Exactly. And also to make a very weird, I guess it's a Buzz Lightyear erection joke.
I think it's a Buzz Lightyear erection joke. That whole romance is so strange, and they do continue with it. They don't really know what to do with it for the other films, which is why I don't think they know what to do with Buzz for after Toy Story 1. It's very clear that Woody is the more complex and interesting character, and they just make Buzz this sort of one note joke.
It's super weird, because also I'm trying to think, what happens to, I watched Toy Story 4 about 3 years ago, and I remember thinking, it's a bit of a mess. There's a lot to say it's good, you know, there's a lot of good things in it, but like, I remember they do something to Buzz. Do they wipe his memory again?
Yeah, they wipe his memory again. It's like, you've done this. They also make him Spanish.
So the Spanish is 3, I think, right?
Yes.
Spanish is 3. And so I think you're right. Every single time with Buzz, to get around the fact that they don't have any kind of like story for him, they either wipe his mind or they make him Spanish or they reset him.
In Toy Story 2, they find a different Buzz.
Who then thinks that he's. So it's basically a rehash of 1, but it works because it's a bonkers film. I mean, two is, I think.
I mean, in Toy Story 2, it makes sense because he goes to a toy. They go to a toy store and they find like the Barbie aisle, which they have a lot of fun with that bit. And then they find like a whole aisle full of Buzz Lightyear toys, and they can make the joke about, you know, how there weren't enough Buzz Lightyear toys that one Christmas in the 90s. And then it's sort of, the joke is that he's the only Buzz Lightyear that realizes he's a toy, and all the rest still have that weird setting where they think that they're the real Buzz Lightyear. They
never really.
So I guess that works.
I suppose, like, and I think in 3 he gets wiped by Evil Bear.
3 was the natural ending. I get annoyed when something has ended and they go, "Well, we've got to carry on the story." So, no, you finished that story.
It was beautiful, Bonnie. They live with Bonnie now, and they'll just have to keep on going from they'll keep being played with, and Bonnie will give it to someone else, and I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
Because I know that that is what you have created here. That's the stories that have been created from there. Irritating. annoying. But there is something, I suppose you're right, the idea of Jesse being like, Bells being infatuated with Jesse is to say, like, she's part of the gang, and that's all it needs to be. Because really, the love isn't, you know, it's just, it's weird, actually, Jesse's relationship with Buzz. And Buzz is perhaps quite an odd character in Toy Story in general.
Woody's the protagonist, yeah. And they've realised that by Toy Story 2. And they're like, there's this other guy who was the antagonist, and now he's an ally, and we're just like, what do we do with this guy? And then for some reason, a few years ago, they went, well, let's make a whole film about him.
Oh, God.
But not him. I haven't seen it. I've got no idea what happens in it.
I hear it's okay, actually, so I shouldn't be too. Okay. But equally, yeah, I think there's so much with... Maybe Buzz Lightyear represents everything that's bad about Pixar. Maybe. Is that an unfair thing to say?
I think probably John Lasseter represents
I was looking up the thing behind Jesse, and I was like, created by John Lasseter, and I was like, not going to talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, and wasn't this film co-written by Joss Whedon as well?
Great, really good, great, strong stuff.
Strong female characters. They're able to create female characters, but they're not actually able to treat actual living human woman ones like they're people.
It's because they're toys.
Only the ones they make up.
Oh, God.
Yeah, just the ones that are in their brains, no. They respect. The ones that exist in the world are...
Not so much.
What can we... Oh, well, Hollywood for you.
Yeah, you can't, again, don't think about the psychological reasons for your crush and who your crushes were invented by.
Yay!
I mean, I think Jesse's manicness is, again, I think it's something I really, I recognize it in myself. Wanting to be like, I'm gonna get this done. It's gonna be done. It's gonna be happy, and everything's gonna be great. And then when it doesn't, you then collapse into a ball. And I suppose all three of these crushes, there's a lot of also wanting to care for them, and that maybe is again something that we have to discuss with our therapist, Jack, not on a podcast. But that the sense of just wanting her to be okay. And I think by the end of Toy Story...
She's okay. She's okay,
yeah. She's okay.
She is okay.
And I think that...
Yeah, she has growth and healing.
Yeah, she has healing, and she sort of learns to be loved again, which is the hardest lesson I think she can have. What do you think happened to the prospector at the end of Toy Story? Do you think he was happy? I know he went into the kid's backpack. And then was...
Kaylee or whatever her name. She's an artist.
Yeah.
I think he did learn to love being a toy, because before then he'd never ever been played with.
Exactly.
I think he ended up covered in marker pen makeup and just having a good life, pretending to be Barbie's... The little girl probably made him... Barbie's dad, and he lives in a dollhouse, and his hair's coloured in green, and I think he's having a nice time. I think he's learned to love being a toy.
Oh, okay, Gabby, here's my pitch. Instead of the Frasier reboot,
yes. And there's another toy that's voiced by David Hyde-Pierce,
and even more of a prospector than that prospector. And you're like, well, the writer would have said to make, you know, to have contrast, but actually the cleverer thing is to make it even more of a prospector.
Even more of a prospector! Like, he's got so much more gold! and his overalls have got two patches on the bum instead of just one!
Oh, for goodness sake, Stinky Pete! How much gold do you need? Oh, God. I would watch the hell out of that.
Who hates prospecting?
You kids and your prospecting. Back in my day,
we used to mine ore.
He's a psychologist. He's a psychiatrist.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God, that's so good. Okay. Let's
pitch it.
Right. Well, on that note, as we write out our pitches and and send them to Disney. If you were able to make one of these characters flesh and blood and real, whom would you choose, and would you try to romantically pursue them?
I love all three of them, obviously. I think in terms of my infatuation, and so I think I love Nanny, but I think I also think that she represents more of how I like, it is a sort of like, it's a sense of the older sister of Friends more than she is an actual person, yeah. If that makes sense. And Jessie's great, but maybe we shouldn't try and turn toys into real people.
Yeah.
So probably, I mean, it has to be Leela, and I love Leela. Yeah. And absolutely not. I would never try. I would like maybe communicate with her once and then write about it in my diary. but like, I would find her far too intimidating. I would just want her to exist though as a cool kick-ass person. Yeah. And I would just like watch her from afar. I'd be like, God, she's
I think
cool.
That's fair.
She's so cool.
She is very, very cool. Are there any projects that you'd like to let us know about before we end this?
Well, I'm still on the People's Podcast, Taskmaster People's Podcast. It should be. When's this coming out? Good question.
Oh, I don't know. Probably New Year now.
Okay, that's fine. I'm on every week the Taskmaster, the People's Podcast with Lou Sanders, where if you like Taskmaster and you like being nerdy and you like stats, oh boy! Am I the person for you? Because I have all the stats about Taskmaster, and we talk, we go very in depth about episodes and trends and things we've noticed. And Lou mentions, Lou will like help your if you have any problems with Taskmaster in your life, like if Taskmaster is becoming a what's the word? Basically, she's being an agony aunt for Taskmaster. That's our new thing. Right, and also, if you know, we chat to fans as well. It's really good fun. We love it. That's every week. And then also my other podcast, The Football Book Club, should be coming back next year. Should be.
Oh, cool.
Which will be really fun. We read footballers' autobiographies for no money and then debate them. And it's really fun. It's with comedy writers James Bug, Natasha Frisco, and James Balgen. It's really fun. Give it a listen.
Real.
Hooray.
Thank you ever so much, Jack.
Thank you so much for having me on. And let's get pitching.
Huge thanks to Jack Bernhardt. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.